My Music. A panel game devised by Tony Schrein and Edward J. Mason. Chairman, Steve Race.
Thank you. Thank you. Sibelius wrote a piece of music known as Four Legends. And I don't know a better way to describe my friends here assembled. John Amis, Frank Muir, Ian Wallace, Dennis Norden.
Which John?
This is the Swan of Tuonela.
John, to start the questioning with you, none shall sleep. Who is this saying so?
The Sicilian bloke, Di Stefano.
Yes, Giuseppe Di Stefano.
Giuseppe Di Stefano.
In Turandot.
By, you know, process of elimination, it's not Björling and it's not all those other people, it's not Pavarotti and so forth.
Or Dennis.
Di Stefano once told a rather nice story, the only witty thing I've ever heard him say. And that is, he says, you can always tell the rich tenors in America from the poor tenors, because the poor tenors have to clean their own Rolls Royces.
Yes. Yes. Ian approves of that story. Frank, two violinists, Stefan Grappelli and Yehudi Menuhin, in a review, I once described their respective sounds as airborne, that was Grappelli, and ardent, that was Menuhin. You may feel different, I don't know. Which of them is playing the tune here, and which of them is giving the answers? Got it, Frank?
We enjoyed that.
Yeah.
But Menuhin's giving the answers, and yes, Stefan is doing the twiddlies.
Stefan is just stating the tune in his own way.
Has any soloist ever contributed such an individual sound to music as him?
And, you know, he's never needed to change it one iota. Ian, where would you say this singer spent his formative years?
Sure, and Mistress Betty was a ditty little witty, and my dad was always ready for a party for a ball. Though she'd courses of every station, of every country and nation, but devil a one did Betty care at all, at all, at all, for devil a one did Betty care at all.
Ian, where's he from?
Neapolitan singer.
I would have thought that he probably spent his formative years in Dublin.
Oh, no, you wouldn't really, would you? No, no, he sings that song. No, he's born in New York. He's Robert White, the son of Joseph White.
Oh.
But he studied in France and Germany and Italy, where he picked up that Irish accent. Robert White it was. Dennis, Joe Venuti had a tune called Ragging the Scale, which goes up and down the scale, as you might expect. I'm going to ask you afterwards what up and down for tricks means in a musical connection. Up and down for tricks, then.
Well, that goes back to the days of the variety theatres.
Yeah, that's right.
And when speciality acts were, as they might be, acrobats or those roller skaters who used to work on a kind of tabletop that they carried around with them, when they gave their band parts to the orchestra, the instruction on the MD's band part would be up and down for tricks. That means that if the orchestra's going da 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 da, when they do a very effective trick, music is to come up da 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 dee 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 dee. So every time, and that promotes the applause. Actually, another thing that was on those variety band parts. John was talking about the difference between rich tenors and poor tenors. The pit musicians could always tell if an act had been accustomed to playing the number three theatres or the number ones, the Moss Empire Tour or the Stoll Tour, because when they got the band parts, if the piano and drum part was much more worn than the brass and the fiddle part, they knew they'd be only been used by small orchestras.
Not so much use for the fourth viola part.
Yes, yes.
It's very much the theme of the book of Palgioi.
Exactly, yes. I want to play the audience the start of something and ask what comes next. Lovely to hear you singing instead of playing the Grieg piano concerto. I had a call from Anthony Hopkins, nice man, and he swears, I don't know if I believe him, he swears that he was present at what must have been the most extraordinary performance ever of that. It was a wartime concert at the Royal Albert Hall, and for some reason the piano failed to turn up. So Cyril Smith, the pianist for the solo, for the concerto, hummed the piano part of the Grieg piano concerto while Sir John Barbirolli and the Halle did the rest. Some quotations from books, classics in fact. John, I wonder if you can give a fairly correct guess just as to the date of this. If Miss Dallaretta and Mr. Oscarum will accompany me, said Mr. Derrydown, we will sing a little harmonized ballad. During this terzetto, the Reverend Mr. Portpipe fell asleep and accompanied the performance with rather a deeper bass than was deemed generally harmonious. A stab at the date, John.
1846?
Bit late, but pretty good. 1817, actually, from a novel by Thomas Love Peacock. Frank, I quote, at Ranelagh, I heard the famous Tenducci, a thing from Italy. Oh. It looks for all the world like a man, though they say it is not. The voice, to be sure, is neither man's nor woman's, but it is more melodious than either, and it warbled so divinely that I really thought myself in paradise. The man who wrote that, Frank, was successively surgeon's mate, unsuccessful doctor, novelist, and a prisoner for libel.
A lovely, bad-tempered Scot. Mm. Tobias Smollett.
That's right.
What a good name to be a novelist. How about that?
Smollett, yeah.
Tobias Smollett. And it's his last and funniest and best book, I think, which is called The Expedition of Humphrey Clinker. And it's a whole lot of letters, actually, of this expedition. And what he does is he goes to Ranelagh and gives a version in a letter by Bramble, who's the equally irascible old uncle, and also by Bramble's nice niece, and you get the nice niece being enchanted by it all, and the irascible Bramble saying what a load of old rubbish it is.
You're right, it's a lovely, lovely book. I copied it out from Humphrey Clinker, that's right, by Tobias Smollett. Ian Wallace, a Devon poet, once observed, some men are like the musical glasses. To produce their finest tones, you must keep them wet. It appears in his Table Talk, published in 1834. To give you a clue to his identity, his most famous epic poem includes the lines, the wedding guest here beat his breast, for he heard the loud bassoon. Now, you know who that was,
yes,
I think.
Coleridge.
Yes, from The Ancient Mariner, yeah. Dennis, I think you'll recognise this literary style. He then showed us a set of organs, indeed the strangest that ever eyes beheld, for the pipes were of cassia fistula in the cod, the top and cornice in guaiacum, the bellows of rhubarb, the pedals of turbith, and the clavier or keys of scammony. Is that familiar? The style.
Well, I think the kind of catalogue thing of it and the anatomical and connections, it sounds like Thomas Urquhart's translation of Rabelais.
Yes, it's from Pantagruel 5. That's right, it's Rabelais.
About the best translation in the English language, wouldn't you think?
I don't know.
Except, MacIam, perhaps.
Oh, you mean of translation of anything?
Of anything, yeah.
I was going to say, I haven't read all the other translations of Rabelais. It's curious how almost any tune can be turned into something resembling a waltz by Johann Strauss. Especially if you help it along with a Straussian introduction. See how you get on with these. Just a little demonstration one first to give you the idea. Knows, of course, is Road to Mandalay.
Oh!
As a waltz. Yeah.
God, I didn't right. recognise it.
Right, we start the round. John, what's this? You know it? I don't think you know it.
I've grown accustomed to her face.
Yes, Frank's got it. I've grown accustomed to her face.
I only know that when I hear Rex Harrison talking.
I've thrown a custard on her face. Yeah. It's the mnemonic.
Frank, one for you, Frank.
No problem. My Viennese music.
Yes, the signature tune of this programme. Yes. Ian, more pseudo Strauss.
I see fingers up and
you can't get
old black
that
magic.
Old black magic. They're helping each other out in this round. Dennis, I think this one makes a really nice waltz.
Doesn't it? Yeah. Begin the beginning, yes.
Begin the beginning, yes. Arnold Strauss. Right. Somebody once said, and I wonder if you can perhaps have a stab at guessing who it was, it has been our purpose to produce something that should be innocent but not imbecile.
Was he really speaking on behalf of a group of people, or was he doing that thing that American singers do when they do an hour's concert and say, we're now going to sing you or in our last tour or on our last record? It's rhetoric which places it not later than the 19th century.
Now, late 19th century, really. He was speaking for two people, himself and his partner.
I hazard a wild guess. Somehow the word imbecile seems to be something that Gilbert would have said.
It was W.S. Gilbert speaking of himself and Arthur Sidney. Well, right.
Don't you think that some modern composers might say that our purpose is to produce something imbecile but not pleasant?
There's one keen movie buff on this stage. I don't think the rest of us go to see all that many films these days. So, for the purposes of my music, we have to dig back a bit when it comes to film songs. John, how far back you can judge from the thin sound of this tiny string section that we hear first? Who is the singer? And by the way, what do you think of the violins? Singer?
Could it be Hildegard?
No,
Baker?
No. It was somebody singing in the film Morocco in 1930. She was co-starring with Gary Cooper in her first American film.
Dietrich.
Dietrich, yes. Marlene Dietrich.
She couldn't sing even then, could she? That was a wonderful film. That was the Josie. At the end of it, she sets off across the trackless desert after Gary Cooper wearing evening dress and high heels.
And why not?
But don't you think that nowadays that it's authentic instruments? They would obviously, if they wanted to play that music again, they would have to use gut strings, not...
Yeah, that's right. Mm. Frank, who's this torchy lady?
Though you hold me in your arms tonight, will tomorrow bring the same delight? Though we love love each other, how long will it last? You are like a burning flame to me. Will you always be the same to me? Though I take your kisses, how long will they last?
The clue was in the torch singer. It's Eva Reddy. Well, beyond that, although John and I are having a long run of winning games,
I'll give you a real clue. She had a woman's face.
Well, of course she would. I mean, that's a clue.
Yes, it's a clue.
It's a woman's face.
Yes.
Was it Joan Crawford?
Joan Crawford. Singing, yes. Ian, your turn. Beefy band stuff, this. Introducing a beefy lady.
Sweets for me, but now I've got a regular guy who loves me constantly.
Who's that in?
I think that's the lady who lent her name to inflatable life jackets.
Yes, that's right, yes.
Mae West.
Yes, in the film I'm No Angel Again, with Cary Grant, of course. Yeah. Dennis, you, of course, are the movie buff I mentioned at the beginning of this round. You see pretty well all the new film releases, I think, even now, don't you?
No, I don't, actually, Steve. I wish I did.
This will take you back something over 55 years, so I don't suppose you saw the film.
No, you were...
And it's
let's rephrase. This song goes back nearly 55
years. So you saw one of the reruns of it, yeah, didn't you? My question is, please, who was the star?
I've covered every little highway, and I've been climbing every hill. I've been looking high, and I've been looking low, looking for my Shanghai Lil.
He did a dance on tabletops then. He was the star of the film. It was James Cagney. People think he danced, his style of dancing was the way he danced in Yankee Doodle. That really was George M. Cohen's dance.
Yeah, that was in the film Footlights Parade, 1933, with Ruby Keeler. Remember, Dennis, the big Busby Berkeley production
now? They did 37 choruses of By a Waterfall.
By a Waterfall, I'm calling you. That's right. In the film Gregory's Girl, there was a charming scene where the boy and girl dance together while lying down, just using their arms. That's the way they do it nowadays. They don't dance together. They merely dance simultaneously. Before disco dancing, there was what somebody called swoop-type dancing, done in a glamorous dance hall called, in our day, a palais de danse. I'm sure you all had your palais moments. What was your favourite dance, please, and why? John, the paragon of the Paso Doble, were you? The wolf of the waltz?
As far as I was concerned, they were all sitting it out waltzes, sitting out dances.
Ah, were they?
I can only dance if I'm really half seas over.
And your partner too, I mean.
Frank, you're tall. You should be a good dancer.
Give it up. I'm the first half of the Tom Jones, because you can duck out of it when you stop in front of the dog, as the Americans say. I once danced with Her Majesty the Queen.
Oh.
We met very many years ago, and it was at the servants' ball in Windsor Castle, and it was the Palais Glide.
Oh.
And there was a string of, including the Queen, and 20 yards round, and I said, can we sit down? This is all. I said, go on, you can keep going, exactly like my wife. Go on, you can keep going another circuit. No, non-dancers.
No. I thought you said to her, do you come here often? Ian, are you a dancer?
I'm an indifferent dancer. I will always get up and have a go.
Oh, most certainly.
Oh, dear.
Your wife is not enjoying the thought.
Well, a lovely dance called The Dashing White Sergeant, where you had two girls, which was quite a satisfactory thing when one was young.
Dennis, you're...
Safety in numbers.
You're lithe and listen, aren't you?
See, that's a fallacy. First of all, we didn't do many dashing white sergeants in gold as green in those. You see, where the fallacy, you said if you're tall. See, I think Frank was to say, I was 6'3" when I was 13. You see, so that whole dancing, admittedly in those days, was a kind of contact sport, but not when you were that tall, because you couldn't dance cheek to cheek without bending into the shape of a sort of question mark.
Nobody to talk to.
Yeah, and nobody to talk to. Also, the girls didn't like it, because if they were blonde and they dyed their hair, from that vantage point, you can see that. But I found I could dance better if I knew the words of the song.
Ah, well, subtle point. Yeah. What a nice point. Irving Berlin said, "The song is ended, but the melody lingers on." In Frank's case, the song isn't ended. It's the melody I'm worried about.
The beginning.
It's a zippy little number called Happy Feet.
Happy feet, I've got those happy feet, 'cause they're low down beat, and they begin dancing. I've got those 10 little tarry toes, and when they hear a tune, I can't control my dancing heels to save my soul. Weary blues can't get inside my shoes, because my shoes refuse to ever grow weary. I keep cheerful on an earful of music sweet, 'cause I've got happy, happy, happy feet. My socks are quite cheerful too.
This song from John might be a Neapolitan folk song. On the other hand, it might actually be by Donizetti, we don't know for sure. The words translate as "from morn till night, for thee I sigh."
Porque cuando me vede tu un grito con un cater, non è che taggio pater, che non me può veder. Io viaggio amato tanto, si t'amo tu lo sei, io te voglio bene, sai. E tu non pensa me, io te voglio bene, sai, e tu non pensa me.
If that was traditional Neapolitan, I can only say that the next song is not. It's by Arthur Leclerc, the man who had such a hit with "He Played His Ukulele as the Ship Went Down." It was in 1935 that Leclerc delivered himself of the sad saga of Bertha Bung, a thespian of sorts.
A chorus girl's beauty for long doesn't last. She soon becomes labelled a thing of the past. Once she gets passé, she's not on the map, unless pushed in to fill up a gap. I know one, Bertha Bung. Not so good, not so fair, not so young. She was one of the front row girls, but now she's pushed round to the back. It can't feel too nice when you're knowing that as chorus girls go, you are going. She was one of the dancing eight with dimples and cute little curls. It's true that her figure was graceful and thin, went in and came out like a real mannequin, but now it comes out and forgets to go in. She's one of the back row girls.
Ian, tell us about your song.
Well, something over 60 years ago, a young girl called Jean Leach came out of music college in Scotland, and she'd composed some songs which were highly praised at the time by her professors, but then for family reasons she had to give up a musical career and all thought of it altogether. And nothing happened to these songs, but I'm very, very delighted tonight to give one of them its first public performance ever. And it's a setting of A. Housman's words, When I Was 21.
When I was 21, I heard a wise man say, give crowns and pounds and guineas, but not your heart away. Give pearls away and rubies, but keep your fancy free. But I was 21, no use to talk to me. When I was 21, I heard him say again, the heart out of the bosom is never given in vain. 'Tis paid with sighs a plenty and sold for endless rue. And I am 22, and oh, 'tis true, and oh, 'tis true.
Seems like only yesterday that we had a bit of a musical quiz going on. The result, a victory this week for Dennis and Ian. Goodbye.
Taking part in My Music were John Amis, Frank Muir, Ian Wallace and Dennis Norden. The chairman was Steve Race. The questions were compiled by Steve Race and the program was produced by Pete Atkins.